Hello and welcome into another episode of the CG Business Advisor, brought to you by CG Tax Audit and Advisory. I want to thank you guys for tuning in to this podcast, and thanks for tuning in to each and every episode. We love the response that we're getting out there. A reminder, make sure you follow the CG Business Advisor wherever you get your podcasts from, Apple or Spotify. And for more information about CG Tax Audit and Advisory, head to cgteam.com. We have a really great episode here for you today. I'm excited about this one. Had the chance to catch up with Ross Stockdale. Now you might be asking, well, who's Ross Stockdale? Great question. Ross is a fractional CMO, but he's also a fellow podcaster. Ross's company, Thunder Stock Marketing, helps small business B2B service companies increase their net profit without breaking the bank in 12 months or less as a fractional CMO. Ross creates and executes winning marketing strategies to increase profit and decrease time and headaches. And on his podcast, Ross talks to a lot of industry professionals about a variety of topics, including entrepreneurial struggles, networking, and how to leverage AI. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I think you will as well. Ross, thanks so much for joining us here on the CG Business Advisor. Really looking forward to talking to you. I'm excited to talk to a fellow podcaster. I always love it when people start their own podcasts. And I guess before we get into the whole podcast aspect of this, tell us about your work as a fractional CMO.
Absolutely, Scott. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on. Fractional CMO is something that I feel like I always wanted to do, but until 3 years ago, I didn't really realize that was a career path. Through my career journey, became a CMO of a company I helped co-found, and then 3 years ago, decided to go on my own and do it fractionally. So what I do is I leverage marketing leadership and strategy to get growth for businesses. What that looks like, it's typically around creating a roadmap where businesses stop doing random acts of marketing and start doing measured, prioritized, strategic and tactical steps to get to where they want to be eventually. And I helped put the right people in the right seats. I helped to set the budget. I helped to make sure that we're on track and things get done as they should. And it's been a wild ride so far.
And how much, I know you're leveraging AI for a lot of your business. How are you utilizing that?
Yeah, I leverage AI so much that I created a spinoff company to do marketing execution using AI. I use it daily. Every week, it feels like I learned some new tip or trick. And really, I think back to a time 10 years ago when I was working 60 hours a week in a tech startup and 40 hours of it was doing a manual repetitive task. Now I can get that same amount of work done by setting up an AI automation that I used to spend 40 hours of man time and salary in like 30 to 60 minutes of tool management time per month versus 200 hours a month of labor. So that's just one way I use it. And anything that has to do with repetitive manual tasks, I think if it can be automated, it should. And then really when it comes to research or editing and review, it's a great tool too. I like to use it as a thought partner and not, a substitute for thinking.
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it. And look, it's scary at times because, as you mentioned it, a lot of tasks that normally would be done by a hired salaried employee are now being done in seconds. But productivity is going up through the roof. And I find it, I'm just like you. I'm learning new ways to use AI every single day just to help with a lot of things with my business and with the content that I produce. And we're using a recording software right now to record this podcast that utilizes AI to help us create social media clips. So I love it. I take advantage of it every way that I possibly can. Speaking of recording podcasts, I know you dove into the podcast field. What got you interested and what made you decide ultimately to start podcasting?
Yeah, great question. Funny story. So for a brief stint of my career, around the time when Conor McGregor was on the rise and still popular and not a, not so notorious, but more aspirational of a person, I was also into cage fighting. I had a 1-1 record after my loss and a few injuries. Realized that, that was not going to be my way forward as a career. Still wanted to get involved and you know, leverage my marketing background and realize Joe Rogan at the time was not the top podcast in the world, but I would, you know, a lot of my friends in the MMA field were niche and listening to it. So I said, hey, let's just start our own podcast. It was the, my kickboxing coach, who was a pro fighter. I did it with the intention to help grow his brand and some of the other, you know, local guys and the guys and gals in the fight scene. Ran that until about COVID, when the pandemic really changed everything. Everything went virtual. Started interviewing business owners via Zoom, very, you know, lowbrow, just randomly trying to stay busy, stay relevant during the remote era. And then when I got really up to speed with the private equity company, I had a full-time editor and a production studio on site, and we started to interview other business owners. That grew traction. When I exited that company, then I started this show, my main show now, called The Thunderstock Show. My company's called Thunderstock Marketing. It's my first one where I was a solo person. I have that's also my longest running tenure, about 175 episodes. Been doing that for the last 3 years. And I had a fourth podcast that was a epic failure, where I actually was doing 5-minute clips with a third party that was managing it. But I did learn a ton. They introduced me to Riverside and some of their helpful tools. So all in all, I've done about 300 podcasts in the last 7 years. And 99% of all the traction happened after quarter two of this year. So exponential hockey stick curve. Yeah, it was kind of crazy, but hey, I'm still here doing it. I think persistence matters.
Yeah, I started diving into, you know, utilizing podcasts as a way to help, you know, businesses reach out to, whether it's their clients or potential new clients, I started to realize, and talking to other people that do this, you know, because I've been podcasting for, I mean, since podcasts were invented, right? I still podcast in, you know, my other walks of life. I'm probably 10 episodes a week, you know, I'm doing, I have a daily pod, you know, and then I have weekly pods. I have all this stuff. So, I mean, my content's just all over the place. But as far as the business stuff is related, the more I talk to people that are into podcasting and utilizing it as a way to grow business, the more I realize, and it's tough for me because I'm such a content driven guy. I mean, my whole career is on content. I've realized that it's not even about the content anymore. The podcast is about networking. And that's what it is. And it's replacing your networking events. It's replacing the, hey, let's go to a golf outing and let's get as many people and clients as we can out here on the golf course and then hope that we talk to each other at the luncheon. It's a way now to utilize your network, to leverage whether your guests' network. And now you're reaching more people than you ever could, because the podcast, frankly, has unlimited reach. Whereas you go to a networking event and you're limited to just the people that are in that room. And I talked to a business owner recently who hosts a podcast studio, and he has, you know, people come in and they film their podcasts on video. And he explained to me how he doesn't even advertise it as a production space anymore. He advertises it as a networking space. And he says, hey, come to my studio, bring in whoever you want to bring in, and have a business meeting, hang out, have your networking event. And oh, by the way, we'll film it and put microphones in front of you. And so when I started thinking about it that way, Ross, it really jumped out to me about the benefits of a podcast for anybody, not just a small to medium sized business, but really anybody that's looking to expand their network.
Yeah. And while I agree with a lot of what you said, I think it's really important to notice that it's not that networking has gone away. It's just changed. Sure. It's not that marketing has fundamentally changed all that much. It's just evolved. And I think one of the problems I had with old networking events, and this was especially pre-pandemic era, was you go there, you dress up, you have a drink or two, you try and get a word in edgewise and hand out as many business cards. That was the KPI. How many business cards can you get out there? But it was really more of a taker's mentality, like, hey, look at me, versus podcasting is more, hey, I can talk to the same people that would want to get in a room, have a 60-minute, if we'd so choose, conversation, really get to know them. and by promoting their content, doing a nice thing for something. So giving first, giving somebody a spot, like giving somebody a platform. And, you know, if you can do podcasting right, like you said, you know, we use Riverside as a tool, and there's a lot of tools out there that can make it easier. It's not nearly as expensive as some people might fear. And you get to do a nice thing for somebody you otherwise might not have been able to talk to.
Yeah. And the best thing about podcasts, and I learned this early on in my business, you know, when taking podcasts, taking radio shows and then doing podcasts and stuff, unlike traditional broadcast mediums, podcasts don't compete with each other. You know, contrary to popular belief, and people's like, oh, you know, oh, this guy's on this chart, this guy's on this chart. The beautiful thing about podcasts is they do not compete with each other. You can listen to mine. You can listen to someone. You can listen to yours. You can listen to somebody else's. You can listen to anybody's you want. It's all available for you. It's not like you're tuning into this radio station at 1 o'clock as opposed to the other radio station at 1 o'clock. I can listen to the pods whenever I want, whoever I want, and every podcast can kind of promote each other, and it's a lot. You can drive synergy, and it's great because it's not a competitive thing. It's all about the community, and it's all about really just getting the content out there, or getting, you know, more networking opportunities out there. At least that's my favorite part about it.
Yeah. The other thing that you mentioned too about traditional broadcasting, when you're on radio or even television ads, which were some of the most dominant forms of advertising or marketing historically, there's only, you know, if you pay for an ad or a slot on television, you have to watch it live unless you record it on a VHS or you have TiVo, some way to record it. Podcasts, people can access it. Once it's out there, it's out there.
Yep.
You know, you can listen to it on your drive to work. You can do it while you're mowing the lawn, while you're on the treadmill, whenever is convenient for the listener. And I think at the end of the day, all marketing should be audience centric and say, okay, what's the most simple, convenient, easy way for this content to be consumed? And right now, I think podcast is sort of the king. You look at, there's no political affiliation one way or the other, but the marketing budget spent between the last election was almost $2 billion, you know, and a lot of the traction and what really got in front of people was podcast appearance, which were earned media, versus these television ads, which were way more expensive.
It's a great point. And also with a podcast, you're turning one piece of content into multiple pieces of content. So when you talk about advertising, it's not just, hey, that one commercial spot or that one billboard. It's, hey, you got the podcast episode that you recorded. Now we're going to turn it into X amount of social clips. Now we're going to share it wherever it can be shared. We're going to maybe promote it on other people's podcasts. So it's taking one piece of content and turning it into as much as you can.
Yeah, and that is so important to talk about when it comes to the concept of leverage, where if we could have a conversation for 30 or 60 minutes, and that conversation could quite literally become, just using audio only as an example, you could put that across all the different audio platforms using a syndication platform. For video, you can, you know, what I do is, it's probably similar to what you do, is I take the long form content, put it on YouTube, but then I make 15 short form clips that can then live on LinkedIn, they can live on Meta or Instagram, they can live on TikTok. So the surface area, you get more lucky the more fishing lines you put in different ponds all over. And it's like, not every single clip's going to go viral, but like if one out of 15 of those does, you have a really happy podcast guest.
Yeah.
You just increase your chances for luck.
Yeah. It's amazing how much the world has changed and how much like just the podcasting industry has completely changed. I mean, you talked about it now with just putting stuff on YouTube and then maximizing the clips and TikTok now. I mean, it's massive. You got people that are making money off just the amount of views that they're getting, which is wild. And I know that's not the goal, you know, for us per se, but it does. You get one clip to go viral. You get a lot of people to share it. It's all about how you can then funnel into the other channels and really, you know, feed off of each other to maximize the views and get as many people to tune in as possible.
And one of the reasons I do love podcasting as a marketing tactic is because, you know, coming from private equity and being a fiduciary steward of whether it's investors' budget, right now as a fractional, my client's budget, making sure they get the most bang for their buck, it's really hard to beat a podcast that is low cost and potential unlimited high, you know, high-end ceiling. But like you mentioned before with networking, the goal is relationships built, and it's not, you know, these vanity clicks or impressions or whatever. And there's, it's hard. It's really hard for other media platforms to compete with how well you can get to know a host or a guest on a podcast versus like a 30-second ad or a billboard. Like you can only get to know somebody so much on a billboard, but if you listen to a podcast that comes out weekly or daily, you get to have a pretty good feeling of that person, and you get to know, like, and trust them much, much more, making, I think, podcasts a better relationship building tool.
All right. Oh, I got to ask, is Chimaev ever going to lose?
So I'm glad you said that. For those that are watching, I've got severe cauliflower ear that I hide behind my headset. And Chimaev is a matchmaker's worst nightmare, because the next in line people, I would say, are probably not going to beat him. But I'm a Pennsylvania guy. All right. Go Penn State. Bo Nickel, who just lost to Rainier DeRitter, is in Chael Sonnen, speaking of podcast clips, just had a viral clip talking about how Bo Nickel is the highest likelihood to, as a stylistic nightmare for Hamzat. Do I think Bo gets the shot? No. But if someone that can wrestle better than Hamzat fights him, then Hamzat's in a lot of trouble. But so far, no one in the top three or top five can wrestle better than him. So in the near future, he's probably not losing.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, this past weekend, the UFC main event title bout, and Chimaev defeated Drake Duplessis for the belt. And, you know, watching those fights, like, and I love betting on UFC. I get, you know, when I do a lot of my betting work and have the fight experts come on and we talk about the stuff. And it's just, I know it might be boring to watch just the guys wrestle for five rounds, but when it's a style and it's a mismatch, it's hard to beat that guy. So as much as you say, hey, DDP plus 220, he's the champ, and maybe he's got a shot, he can knock him out. You're not going to knock out a guy that's going to keep you down on the mat for the entire five rounds.
Yeah, I think that the problem with the MMA community is when you have champions that are, you know, make their money off of highlight reel knockouts. Like, perfect example is Alex Pereira, Poatan. It's like, oh, he's unbeatable. Well, not if you hug him against a cage for 20 minutes. Then he's beatable. And it's very boring for casual fans that, like, haven't competed in MMA. But for somebody who's wrestled their whole life, done jiu-jitsu for 10 plus years and fought, it's like, how difficult it is to hold down a grown man for 22 and a half minutes out of 25. Like, it might be very boring, which I'm not disagreeing, for most people watching it is, but it is like watching Tiger Woods in his prime. It's like it was one of the most dominant performances that went the full five rounds of any championship. And it's like, look, yeah, everyone loves a 13-second knockout, like when Conor McGregor knocked out Jose Aldo, but you could describe that as luck. Nothing about what Hamzat did to DDP was luck.
Hey, I had the over 2.5 rounds, so I was happy. I wanted to ask you, what have you taken from your experience in the fight game, whether it was when you were a fighter, whether it was when you were training, whether it's in your post-fighting career, now that you've obviously made a successful business career, what lessons have you learned from your experience training and fighting that you've carried over into your businesses?
Two that come to mind instantly. The first is that it's better to be known and different than it is to be the best at anything that you do. So my first ever cage fight, I sold over 100 tickets, which you might, you know, for people that don't have the perspective, for a debut amateur, that's a lot, especially because it was twice as much as the headline fight. So when the very first fight of the night, which was my 0-0, had a full crowd, the promoter was like, what just happened here? Because I had a marketing background, so I knew how to market and promote the event. So I think that the promoter loved me because it was a sold out thing, and I sold a lion's share of the tickets. So number one, it's those who sell and market, like Conor McGregor. Part of the reason his bad behavior is the way it is because he made so much money being a marketable, before clip farming was a thing. Number two, I would say that the closest experience that I have to entrepreneurship was not, being on a leadership team of a marketing agency, was not being, in any positions I had in brand side or working for companies. It wasn't even being a real estate agent. It was being a cage fighter, because the amount of stress and 24/7 focus and attention you have to have on your business in order to have the opportunity to be successful, it can only really be, in my frame of experience, likened to what it was like as a cage fighter, because people think that the 25 minutes in the championship fight is the fight. That's the easiest part of being a cage fighter. The hardest part is making weight, not staying injured. The hardest part is selling tickets while getting better at what you do. The hardest part is knowing that on a date and time, it could be millions of people are watching you. And you think about stage fright, people say public speaking is one of the greatest fears. Imagine doing that in your underwear with dire physical consequences. So the stress management and dedication you need to have as a cage fighter and as an entrepreneur, pretty similar. The stakes are high.
So what's been obviously a big thrill for you is winning that first fight, right? So, I mean, you get a win under your belt in any professional fight, an incredible accomplishment. What has been your biggest business win?
Boy.
Or maybe the one that you celebrated maybe the most, because maybe it was your first one.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I actually want to answer the question about the thing that was the most beneficial was my fight loss. Lost my second fight, I was really bummed out, and my coach just goes, "Hey, guess what? No one cares except for you that you lost. Get over it. Tomorrow is another day, and everyone's going to forget. So like, this loss has zero impact on your future success." And that's the same for business. Like, every time I've taken a business L, it's been like, oh man. And then you just get a business win and you're like, oh wow, the ability to bounce back, like resilience. But no, my biggest business win, if I had to say, it has been 6 years ago, almost to the date, I had told my mother that I wasn't going to work for anybody again. And she was one of those proponents for so long where she was like, oh, just get a job, play it safe. Like, yeah, keep dreaming. You're young. You're full of dreams. And then she goes, yeah, I believe you. I think you'll make it work. And still to this day, I've been self-employed, whether it's with partners for the first 3 years of my business career. And then the last 3 years has been, by my own, just kind of figured it out. And that's probably my biggest win, is just staying in the game for as long as I've been. I think the first 5 years are the hardest, and I'm going on year 7.
I love it, man. That's impressive stuff. Just want to give, the information out there. So tell everyone about your business, where they can find you, and some of the things that you offer, as well as let's promote the podcast. I want people to find you on social media and wherever they can listen to their podcast, watch on the YouTube, things like that.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah. So you can find me on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn handle is J. Ross Stockdale. I have a website, thunderstockmarketing.com. That's fractional CMO services for small business owners doing anywhere between sub 1 million around there to 40 million. My goal is to, act as the head of marketing. And a lot of small business owners can't afford a full-time CMO. And I try to do it fractionally, so it's affordable and help you scale and grow using the lessons I've learned from marketing agencies and private equity. And then I have Swim Solutions AI, which is custom marketing AI solutions. Again, you don't have to be a Fortune 500 company to have your own custom AI solution. We can help you out there. And then my podcast is called The Thunderstock Show. You can check it out on YouTube or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Absolutely love that, man. Any questions for me, man? I feel like I've been just grilling you this whole time because I'm so intrigued by what you've been doing.
Yeah. So how did you get into podcasting and what was your genesis? You said you've been doing it for quite some time.
Yeah. So my background's in radio. I've been in radio for, 20 years, maybe. I think I started, a little less than 20 years because I started as soon as I was in college and got an internship. So I've been in radio my whole career, obviously aspired to, be on the air but was in production for the first several years of my career. And then when podcasting first launched, it was an amazing thing. Like everyone was like, what is this? Like, Apple came out with this whole thing, a podcast, right? Wow. To listen on your iPod. Like, oh my God, what is this? And in the beginning, it was just, hey, we're going to take the radio show and we're just going to put it on this Apple server. And so people can listen to the radio show later. Cool idea, right? And then as it eventually became like this other avenue of doing content, it just kind of snowballed. One thing led to another. And then for many years, podcasting became like the essential companion to your radio show. So you'd do a 3-hour show and then you'd podcast each hour. So you can say, hey, all right, you missed this interview with this person. Go check us out on the podcast later on. And that was it. That was the promotion. It was, hey, if you missed any portion of the show, you can go listen to it at a later time on the podcast. I started podding. I started hosting my own pods eventually, or just doing little segments on pods. My career kind of went in many different directions, found my way into many different companies and some of the biggest brands in the world. Now I'm on TV, I'm on radio, and I do multiple podcasts. I just most recently stopped doing pods for a company and started my own outside brand, which is, scary, but I've always kind of had that entrepreneurial mindset, whether it's, my consulting business with podcasts or now my content business. And creating, creating a website, creating a platform, creating a subscription platform. It's wild. But yeah, long story, long way about saying that my journey into podcasting stems from radio and evolving just the way radio has evolved, evolving the way podcasting has evolved each and every year to where we are now, using AI to create social media clips for us to promote our podcasts. Yeah,
I've got one more question for you.
Yeah,
it's an interesting one. If you could interview anyone, who would you interview and why?
It's crazy. It's such a wild question for me because I've been so fortunate in my career. And for those who don't know my background, because I don't talk about it a lot here on this podcast, because for me the focus on this, the CG Business Advisor is on the guests and on the business aspect of it, but. I'm a sports radio host and a sports television host. So my background is in sports, and I have been fortunate throughout my 20-year career to interview literally the biggest names in the sports world. And if you can name anybody in the sports world, I've either worked with them or interviewed them. So it's hard to answer that question just because I've been very fortunate to accomplish a lot of things in my career, going to a lot of events and stuff. I would say, off the top of my head, I mean, politics aside, I would love to interview a president, just like any president. I think that's pretty awesome. There was one time I was working on a radio show and we were supposed to have President Obama call in, and he called in after we got off the air. No. So I answered the phone and it was the White House. And they said, we have the president for you. And I said, we are off the air. The show is over. Like, our host is not here anymore. And so at the time I was like, do I talk to him? Like, but then they were just like, hey,
encore.
Yeah. They just, they were just, all right, we'll try again next time. But it was, that was a pretty wild experience. I'm not so sure. It's a really tough question. I know we could talk about like historical figures and people that are long gone and have passed away, or people in your life that you would love to talk to, whether it's relatives, distant relatives, all that stuff. But yeah, the quick answer for me, as someone who has been fortunate in their career to interview a lot of their sports idols and things like that, I would say somebody in a different walk of life, whether it is, you know, the president of the United States or some, maybe the most, I don't know, the most famous businessman in the world or something, you know, just somebody that I would never have the opportunity to talk to ever. Because I do think that even if we say like, I mean, I don't know, like who's like the biggest sports person you would ever want to talk to. Like, I feel like I've either had the opportunity to, even though I haven't spoken to them, but I've been in the room with them, or I've been in their presence, or I've been around other people that have spoken to them. So I feel like, oh, I'll get that opportunity at some point. You love MMA. I mean, I live in Vegas. I see Dana White all the time at the local casinos, you know, like the dude literally like, just like, we'll walk past you in like one of the local casinos when he's going to play blackjack. And I'm just like, ah, what's up, Dana White? And he'll just nod his head at you and be like, what's up, buddy? And just like walk past you, you know?
you kind of stole my thunder. That's an interesting, my answer would be Alex Ramosi. He lives in Las Vegas. He just set the Guinness Book World Records for highest selling nonfiction author.
Yeah, is that that's the creator of School?
He's one of the co-owners now, but yeah. He's acquisition.com. He just launched $100 million money models.
Yeah.
Sold, yep. I don't know how many millions copies in the first 24 hours, but it was a lot.
Yeah. So I've seen, School is an interesting platform. I was exploring it a little bit. It's a little pricey. Worth it if you can build the community, but you have to have the right model, the right premise. Like, I think it's more about, if you were going to provide, you know, coaching or give or lessons, it's more so than that, than just, hey, I'm going to have people subscribe to, you know, a sports betting platform and I'll give you picks. Right. It's more than that. It would be more like, hey, I'm going to coach you on how to do this, and we're going to set up one-on-one things. That would be the platform. But yeah, I'm very familiar with him.
Cool.
Never met him though, but, I don't, and I haven't seen him around town, so I don't know. Maybe I have. Maybe he's in my gym, and I have no idea. You know, I can't know. So, yeah. But Ross, this is awesome, man. Once again, tell people where to find you: LinkedIn, podcast, social media, all that stuff.
Yep, search J. Ross Stockdale on LinkedIn. You'll find me, and my podcast is the Thunderstock Show. I answer all my own stuff, so I would love to get in touch.
Ross, I love the conversation, man. So happy to connect with you, and hope we can do it again soon.
Cheers. Thanks, Scott.
Really a great conversation with Ross Stockdale there. And for more information, you can head to his website, thunderstockmarketing.com. You can hit up Ross on LinkedIn, the email address, ross@thunderstockmarketing.com, available as well. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode. Really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and hopefully as much as Ross did. And we will have some information about Ross and about the podcast as well on our website, cgteam.com. And that's where you'll find all the information about CG Tax Audit and Advisory. And make sure you follow the podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods from, and make sure you never miss an episode of us right here on the CG Business Advisor. Coming up, we're going to have some great content surrounding the Big Beautiful Bill. That's right. Lots of important information that you might not be aware of. And we look forward to some in-depth conversations that will provide some great information for you, the audience. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the CG Business Advisor.